Hello and welcome to Conqueror's Corner. Today I'm speaking with Diana E. Patterson, who is a very shrewd investor that I have been speaking with and sharing information with on Twitter for over 2 years. I had the great pleasure a couple of weeks ago at Master Investor Show to meet Diana and a larger group of Twitterati, as we called them, at the Master Investor Show. Hello, Diana, how are you today?
Hello, Peter. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm in sunny Leicester today. How are you?
Yes, I'm sitting in my sunny village in my office at the moment.
Okie dokie. Now, Diana, as we spoke before, Conqueror's Corner is really about us sharing information with others on our learning journey so far as investors. So I'm going to start by just asking you your background and career thus far.
Yes, well, I started off as a student nurse and I worked my way to being a ward sister and then a tutor and then an examiner to the General Nursing Council. I loved it. I loved it every minute of it. It was very hard work. And then I switched careers and I went into the legal profession, a complete change, and then I became a solicitor.
Very interesting. Okay. And what was it? Why was the reason behind the change?
Well, the reason behind the change, Peter, was I found that with all the hard work, and yes, I loved the patients, all very rewarding. We used to call it psychic wages. It really was very poorly paid. I found I'd gone as far as I could in nursing,
Yeah.
and when I was 30, I thought, let's have a change. So I decided to study law. The theory I found very interesting.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't like legal practice very much. It
Okay,
suited
okay.
me. It didn't suit my personality.
Right, okay. So you made the radical change then from there on.
I did. That's right. I mean, later on, as I said, we used to call it psychic wages in hospitals. When I was in the legal profession, yes, it was very well paid. It was hard work, but I wasn't happy. So basically, the change. I wanted financial freedom. I decided, really, I wanted to work for myself.
Excellent, excellent. So what was the first sort of changes that you made then regarding that first steps into invest? Did you go straight into researching investing, or did you start reading books, or?
Yes, when I was nursing, I discovered, I thought, oh, what's this? Tip sheets and interesting things about shares. And I'd
Yes.
never been interested in gambling or anything like that.
Yeah.
I thought, gosh, this is interesting. So I started to subscribe to tip sheets
Okay.
and found them very interesting, but I had very little knowledge. I wasn't reading, financial books or anything like that.
Right, okay.
Developed an interest, but what I did, I bought some shares and they boosted my earnings.
Oh, right, okay.
So that was a very, very, that was a good thing to do at the time.
All right then. So you were attracted by potentially having the freedom to do what you wanted to do when you wanted to do it.
That's absolutely right. And then, in addition to that, in my spare time, I was doing a law degree. And then I went full time to the and did the Law Society finals and became a solicitor, which was very useful
Fantastic.
education because you have to do about 12 subjects, one of which is company law, revenue
Yeah.
law. Unfortunately, I've forgotten a lot of it now, but it was very handy for
Yeah.
trying to learn to read balance sheets.
Of course, because you have to read between the lines with these balance sheets nowadays, don't you?
Absolutely, that's right.
Okay, so do you remember the first stock or investment you ever made that you said that did so well?
I don't remember the name of it because I'm going back rather a long time, but from my penny share tip sheets, basically what I did buy a basket of them because I didn't
Okay.
really know, and I was going on stories. I didn't really know much because I was still nursing then, and
Right.
so I wasn't going on fundamentals. But what I did do, right, they were high risk, but what I did do is I took profits quickly. I was so
Wow.
grateful if something doubled or trebled within a
Yeah.
month, that I thought, gosh, this is fantastic. So I did take fast profits, which was very fortunate because we then had the 1987 share crash.
Yes, very true, very
So
true.
thank goodness I wasn't greedy.
Yeah.
What I learned from that, Peter, is that what was left in, you had to get out fast.
Yes.
What was left in, I wasn't fast enough. And the problem with that is a lot of them went bust. So I just basically sold the rest. But I still came out very, very well off because I wasn't greedy in the first place.
No, that's a, that was a very, very shrewd, in hindsight, a very shrewd move as well.
Yes, luck, I think.
We all need a little bit of luck when it comes to investing.
A lot of it, I think, is luck, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so given that you're saying that that happened in 1987.
Yes.
How long have you been investing now then?
I would say, over. Well, it is over 30 years.
Right, okay.
Yes.
So a lot of learning attained since then.
Yes, experience. As I said, I didn't read the textbooks in the early stages. But then as the years went by and I was studying law, and obviously I was reading textbooks for that, I read books like David Dreeman, you know, Contrarian Value Investing.
Yep.
So I morphed from being a bit of a gambler on the penny shares and started to look for value shares that paid dividends and had good fundamentals.
Yeah, that's a very, very good book, that is.
It's excellent. And also, many years ago, what I noticed is the stock market moved at a much slower pace. It was in the days where there was no internet.
Yes.
Very little information to work on.
Yes.
You had to post contract notes and share certificates. I lived at the post box. And all that sort of thing. So I thought, well, this is a bit hectic with penny shares. Let's go into value shares and think a bit long term.
Yeah, that comes on to my next question, actually, as to how would you describe yourself with Guy as an investor, and how do you describe your investment strategy?
Right. My investment strategy, really now, I do have a core long-term portfolio, but my main strategy is I buy counterintuitively into a bear market, into fear in a bear market. They now call it the VIX. I don't know if it was called the VIX 30 years ago, but when there's a lot of fear in the market, and that includes my own fear, I buy quite heavily in, having sold when everything was very happy and cheerful.
And very rosy,
Yes, everything gets so bullish. And one of the things I notice is, for instance, when you have very lavish parties at Christmas given by the big whoever they are in the city, and I think, gosh, they're spending millions on these parties, it's wasting money, and that's for me a sign when I think things have got a bit too high.
Well, those are some indicators I've not really thought of myself there, Diana.
Well, that's quite something coming from you, Conkers.
Okay, yes. Then looking at your investment portfolio as being 100%, what percentage would you say is spread across blue chips, funds, stocks, shares, investment trusts, etc.?
Well, at the moment, I'm 60% in cash. And the reason is because I feel that we are in one of the longest bull, or were till we started this bear phase, in one of the longest bull markets in history. So I'll start with that. And I'm 60% in cash because of my caution.
Yeah.
I would say about 5% in FTSE 100 shares, which are mainly house builders that were not FTSE shares at the time I bought in 2008, 2009, when they were hated.
Yeah.
And then HSBC, and that's about all. I have just a few venture capital trusts and a couple of investment trusts, but they're hardly worth mentioning. The other 35%, I would say, is in mid caps and a few small caps.
Okay, we've spoken at length, really, about your counterintuitive nature and contrarian bets that you made on the house builders going back to 2008.
Yes.
And that's been absolutely exceptional. So what could you share with some of our listeners regarding that, those sort of gradual bets that you made with the house builders at the time?
Well, 2008 for me was the buying opportunity of a lifetime. It was, at the time, it felt ghastly, but it was actually the best thing that ever happened to me. In 2007, I probably went 50 or 60% in cash. What was left in was hit very, very hard and was just about halved. So obviously I was very upset. I thought a lot of other people would be very upset. I was absolutely terrified and I was squirming, but I was buying house builders for pence in 2008, 2009, yeah, when the press was dreadful on them. And they had and other shares that had 12% yields and 4% PEs, wow, and that sort of thing, which were, yeah, eventually taken over. And it was a lot, quite a long wait. It didn't happen overnight. I had to wait a year or two, and then suddenly they went up. And I thought that, I mean, that it was just wonderful. And then you regret not having bought more, of course.
Of course. But the great thing about that is that your patience and your research was rewarded, because there's a sense now that there is a serious lack of patience in the markets now.
Yes.
Investors are looking for returns overnight, inside a week, etc.
Yes. I think that is right, Peter. But I think also when I first started investing, they moved at a more pedestrian pace.
Yeah.
We didn't have 1 or 2% rises in a day. You know, that happened perhaps over a month.
Yeah.
And so I must admit, from having been a long-term investor, I'm probably now more of a medium. You know, I started gambling with penny shares, but
yeah,
then I went more long-term because, yeah, I got fed up being at the post box. And then I'm probably now more a medium-term investor because I like to work contracyclically,
yeah,
into the bear markets, and then I run them up for 2 to 5 years.
Okay, that's a very, very good strategy, because as you say, it was with builders and banks, etc.
Yes.
They're very cyclical, aren't they?
And yes, exactly.
With changing politics and changing regulation, etc.
That's right. Engineers, non-life assurers, even some retailers, you know, some of them were taken over, Austin Reed and all those little things, and
yeah,
Thornton's and that type of thing.
Yeah, that's a very, very, very good analogy there. So given what you've said to me thus far, what are your essential criteria when searching companies that would lead you, Diana, to press that elusive buy button?
Right. Well, I think probably one of the top things is yield, and to check that it's covered twice, preferably.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's covered 1.5 times, but it looks like they're going to grow, then
yeah,
we'll go for 1.5 times, possibly even 1.2, 1.3 times. That's the first one. The next thing, I do prefer the PEG to be less than one, to have a little bit of growth there. PE ratios, I'd rather they were lower than higher, definitely below 15, because I'm no good at momentum investing. I know that's my weak spot. I get
right.
It wrong every time.
Right, okay.
I do like to know, that's right, the return on capital, the ROCE figure I look,
yeah,
at now. That's a fairly recent thing that I've started looking at. I don't like to see too much debt, and I do like to see a bit of cash on the balance sheet. So it's quite a simple thing, and obviously which sector it's in. I don't go on stories.
Right. So, I mean, you've got a really great filter there, Diana. I want you to go back to the ROC bit. What are you looking for there? Are you looking for plus 10%, plus 15%?
I do prefer, I prefer double digits. Yes,
double digits.
I have to say, I did learn that from an esteemed Twitterati.
Right.
And I did learn that. And double digits ROCE is a preferable figure. Yes.
No, that makes perfect sense. So, and you also mentioned the fact that you're not going for stories, because as we've seen in the last, especially more recently, the last 3 or 4 years, there's been quite a lot of story stocks that have come out, IPO'd, flown very high, hit the sun like Icarus, and then fallen very sharply.
Absolutely. And I'm no good at it. I tried it a few years ago and I thought, oh gosh, you know, and look at the charts and all that looks good. And I mean, I'm no good at charts either. And I tried one or two and I thought, no, stick to what you know and you understand.
No, that's excellent. I mean, we're all learning, Diana. And I think this is the beauty of when we all met at the Master Investor Show, that there were individuals there that had, you know, 5 years experience and 35 year experience. And we were all come to the same conclusion that every day the market's teaching us another lesson.
Absolutely. You know? I still make mistakes. I made a mistake just the other day. And I think I call it a euphemism is a black swan event. Something horrible happened. And I think I still make mistakes.
No, that's good. We're all doing that on a daily basis, Diana. So what has been your greatest lesson that you've attained since you started investing, do you think?
Right. The greatest lesson for me is, if a market turns bearish, I think you have to get out early. I don't sit and wait anymore and think, yes, oh, maybe I'll average down now, maybe I'll top up. Falling knives, I still catch them, but I try not to. Yes. So if market turns bearish, get out early. I did sell into the 2007 euphoria when, you know, as I say, I was fortunate in that I already had fairly high cash levels. I got out as fast as I could. However, what I must say is if you're late getting out, then stick with it. Unless you think a gambling company and one that's going to go bust, then obviously take the money that you can. Yeah. But if you're late getting out with, say, a quality share and it's just sentiment driven, I will average down. And I will average down two or three, perhaps four times. I did it with the house builders in 2008 and 9. However, having said that, my cash levels, they were high as a protection.
Okay, but so therefore, I mean, just to qualify that to our listeners, is that you're assessing each company dependent on the market and dependent on the circumstance.
Yes, I don't just think sell everything.
Yeah.
Each company is looked at as fast as I can. For instance, at the beginning of this year, once it was decided that the market was going to turn bearish, it took me 2 or 3 weeks to go from, say, 20 or 30% cash to 60 or 70% cash, because I had to research every share. Otherwise, you're throwing the baby out with bathwater.
I completely agree with that. That's very, very good strategy, I think, and very sensible as well.
Thank you.
So what has been your wisest investment decision to date, Diana?
I would say always stick with equities. And as Einstein stated, compounding is the eighth wonder of the world. Even if I think the bear market has turned bearish, I will never, never come out 100%, because you have to be in to win. And if you leave good quality companies in the stock market, a core high yield portfolio that I have that I don't touch, you have those compounding dividends, and that gives you confidence, because it's very nice when those come in, and it really does give you confidence. And also persist with despair. If you think that you are so frightened and so silly because you're still in it, still persist. Never give up. Everybody shares the same pain, and try not to sell at the bottom.
Wow. Some pearls of wisdom there, then. That's very, very good. No, thank you very much. That's very, very profound.
Thank you.
No, that's very kind of you to share that with us, because I think what's happened, well, we've seen what's happened just in the last 12 months, really, with the stock market peaking, and as the market's going down, and certain stocks have been completely sold off. Mm-hmm. And great examples, of course, were Anglo-American back in January and February. Everyone was like, you know, I think the days are done with Anglo American. They're going to get taken over by this company or that company. Mm. And within, I think it was 4 or 5 weeks, it just kept going up, and everyone was in denial. Yes. And before we know it, the stock price had doubled.
Yes. Unfortunately, I missed that one.
I think many individuals and institutions did so, Diana.
I think because we're looking at the fundamentals, and they were.
Yes, of course. Right. Okay. So, I'm going to gauge now and say that you've been in the investing arena now for more than 30 years. Okay.
Yes.
So if there's one thing you could change regarding the investing landscape, what would it be?
Right. If there's one, I had to think pretty hard about that one, Peter. I think what it would be, the private investor is neglected in favour of institutional investors.
Right.
And the problem is, because we're all trading online now, and if you have Crest, I have Crest accounts.
Yeah.
If you have something outside the tax wrappers, you have your vote. But if you're in ISAs or SIPs, you lose your vote. And I think that's a pity. I really think that's a pity. I think that's where private investors lose out.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. I mean, I spoke with Steve Marcus yesterday or the day before, and he raised the same sort of point, that these nominee accounts, whilst they're speedy and enable us to do things online very quickly, all of our votes and everything are pooled. And we don't get the opportunity to voice our concerns regarding remuneration and all the rest of it.
Exactly.
And also then there can be the stocks that we hold can be easily manipulated or sold on or shorted, etc.
Yes, I agree. Oh, that's interesting. That's a coincidence that Steve mentioned that as well.
Yeah. I know that Mark at ShareSog is working on that and speaking
Mark
with
Is that Mark Martin?
Yes, Mark Martin. Yes. Yeah, that he's working with them on that to speak to the FCA and the stock exchange, etc. But it seems that the certain entities, I won't go into names, have got the situation so tied up that they're reluctant for change.
Yes, exactly. I'm going to join that. I think Mark's doing excellent work on that.
Okay, so I mean, we I'll have to get I might have to approach Mark to get him to speak to Conker's Corner regarding that and see what we can do vocally to support him in that matter. Okay, so I've got one more question, and obviously you could tell me some more about your learning and your investing history if you wish. But the final question I have for you was, if you were starting out today in investing, what would you do that you had not considered or were unable to do back in the 80s/90s?
Yes. That was because I did what I could within the constraints of the time. There was no internet.
Of course.
Such a dinosaur. There was no internet. But there were books which I didn't read before buying the penny shares. So what I should have done is read books first before even... Well, having said that, I must admit I did take profits quickly, but that was pure luck. It could have been a lot worse than that. So I should have read more books. The other thing I'm thinking of is really you have, on top of reading the books, you then have to put it into practice.
Yes,
so practice you can't, and yeah, you can't beat experience. It becomes instinct.
Yeah, there's a big... I mean... I, as you know, I mentor quite a few people on Twitter via DMs and so on and so forth. And I think, unfortunately, and this might not seem sensical, what I'm saying. However, when you started out, there was no internet. And what that enabled you to do was to think and to slowly approach the market.
Yes.
Because of the internet now, everyone's a hare and running at speed.
Yes.
And the reluctance to learn... And to learn slowly because it's that fear of missing out.
Yes, that's right.
You know, and wanting to make a return overnight. So the market's got to a point now where everyone's racing ahead without having none of us have got a complete full set of knowledge, but everyone's racing to make the return overnight.
Yes, that's right. And I think in my day, that's when people were drawn to the penny shares.
Yeah.
It's called the USM, Unlisted Securities Market.
Yeah.
Before AIM, and now people are drawn to AIM, but certainly markets are, the cycles are shorter.
Yes.
And also the markets are more volatile more often, so that, as you said, people want quick gains overnight, but of course they can be quick losses overnight. This is the problem.
They can be. I mean, I wanted to ask you a slightly different question about the markets and the speed, because I've tweeted quite a lot about HFTs, and I wondered what your thoughts were on high frequency trading and how that's impacted or influenced the markets. Any thoughts on that?
I'm with Warren Buffett on that. Yes, I know. I think this is a problem. The programmed computer trading and all that sort of thing, I think it can be more dangerous. And I think that's why 2008 won't be a unique event. So far, it's been the opportunity of my lifetime. But unfortunately, I think because of this, all these HFTs, I think it leads to more volatile swings. So the herd is amplified.
Yes.
Because you not only have lots of people with their emotions, you have computers act in tandem.
Very, very true. Very, very true. We are unfortunately going to be seeing, as you say, that event occurring again. And we have seen them in sorts, really, with I think at least 3 flash crashes, haven't we, in the last 3 years?
Yes.
And we still haven't got answers on the last 2, I don't think, as to why they occurred or when, you know, what was behind them.
That's right. That was August and February, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Those 2 nasty ones. And of course, volatility usually indicates a change of trend.
Yes.
So it could be a downward trend.
Yes. because we've got a lot more indebted companies, as you said at the very beginning of our talk.
Absolutely, indebted. And of course, we've had QE, the world experiment.
Yes.
Where's that going to go?
Yeah.
Cutting can only go so far. And companies, I think, particularly in the US, lots and lots of share buybacks because they've got cheap money with which to do it.
That is very true. I mean, I've looked at companies that have been doing buybacks in the UK as well. And the vast majority of them haven't really helped the share price whatsoever, but the money's long gone and the shares have been cancelled.
Exactly. Exactly. That's right. And so where's the growth in the earnings?
I really don't know. It's a sad tale of woe for many investors.
I'm sorry to be depressing, Peter. But
No. It's, we have to touch on the salient points. And, you know, investors and shareholders need to think... when they hear, oh, these buybacks are coming, because it's not always good news.
It's not always healthy, no.
Yeah.
But there are buying opportunities. You see, if people are cautious and they're not 100% invested, particularly at the end of a long bull market, you think, oh, bargains.
Yeah.
Because they get oversold.
Yes, they do. That's very true. Very true. There's always an opportunity in the market for somebody. And as I say to everybody, research, 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 and go as deep as you can, because you will find some gems. And people say, Peter, why have you invested in that today? Why have you done that yesterday? And I say, well, because I've done some research, and I think, you know, if the catalyst arrives, then this could happen. If it doesn't, then I'll be sat here holding this, or I'll have to sell it at a loss. Yeah.
This is the thing. And also, if you are a contrarian value investor, say in a bear market, that's something else. Contrarian value doesn't always work in a bull market. If a share goes down, there is a reason. And I have recently learned that news follows price.
Yes.
If it's in a bear market and the share has been driven down by sentiment, then it's artificially low.
Yes.
The chart will look ghastly, but you've got lots of very frightened people the bears take advantage by shorting and they frighten people out. And therein lies the opportunity. But I don't think that works so well in a bull market, that there is something wrong with the share if it just keeps tanking.
No, those are very, very good points. Diana, thank you ever so much. I just wanted to ask one more question, if I may.
Yes.
Given that investors of 2016 are now sitting here thinking, what's going to happen with regards to Brexit? What's going to happen if Trump actually wins in the US? What would you like to share with investors to say, you know, I'm here sitting in Congress Corner. This is my view. What do you think?
I'm going to try my best to resist that buy button for the next few months because the market, as we all know, hates uncertainty.
Certainty, yeah.
So I would wait until possibly just before, there could be a capitulation just before the referendum.
Of course.
Personally, I think we're going to stay in which case the market could rocket, which is why my intention is to buy more heavily just before the referendum. And also, if Trump gets in, you know, a lot of Wall Street commentators like Trump. When I listen to them, I think because they're concerned with Clinton about high taxes and regulation and that sort of thing. So whatever one's personal politics are, I don't know whether that's going to be good or bad for the stock market. He's supposed to be weaker on the economy. I don't know. I'm no judge of that. I don't know the circumstances. But that one is a bit more difficult. The stock market, Wall Street, might like him.
Yeah, I've looked at the Brexit side of things, and currently, if you were to go with the bookmakers, then we're staying pat. You know, we're going to be staying here for a little while. The American commentators, they love and loathe Trump.
Yes.
And it depends really on which channel or American channel you are listening to, as to who's saying positive or negative things. But I'm really not sure about how the American situation is going to work out for the stock market. I think Hillary will win out, but it's going to be a very, very ugly campaign.
I agree. I think Hillary will win.
Yeah.
That's a more difficult question. I think we'd have to keep always keep some cash by.
Yeah.
Ready for the unknown.
I think that's the point we're going to end this on, Diana, because I think that's a great point to have, is that irrespective of how bullish the markets are,
yes,
or how bearish the markets are, always have cash handy, because there's bargains to be had,
yes,
if you've done enough research.
Yes, yes, that's so, right.
Okay, Diana, I want to take this opportunity to thank you ever so much for participating in Conker's Corner.
Thank you for asking me, Peter. I'm very grateful.
And thank you for being so candid with your learning, and hopefully it will benefit some others that are just in the process, or, you know, have been around the markets for 30 plus years and are still open to learning.
Thank you very much. And so am I.
All right, Diana. Thank you.
Thank
and
you,
I'll speak
Peter.
To you soon. See you on Twitter.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.